Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th day of April, the last day of April, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Beg your pardon. I think we need to start with a reminder of the great Steve Ray, who's now left the room, so I can talk about him.
Yeah.
Who did yeoman service the last couple of weeks, getting me into the stream and into the show.
That worked out good last week.
Yeah, it really did. As you know, I was one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. And
at least they let you go.
And they finally let me go. They didn't catch me. Steve bounced the signal off 34 states, 16 satellites, and a Polaris submarine, and so they never caught me. And now I'm back live. Statute of limitations has expired.
I can be. They can't do anything without proof.
I can be seen in public again. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank him for that. I also want to thank everybody who pledged. Our pledge drive is over. We did not make our goal. Sadly, we did not make our goal. We fell short by some $15,000. I want to thank everybody who contributed. God bless you. Thank you so much. Things will change. We don't know what will change. We don't know how they will change, but we know things will change. Mm-hmm. And so those of you who did not pledge, well, you know, there you are. So here we go with the news. Twitter's board of directors has agreed to sell the company to Elon Musk for $44 billion. That's billion with a B, dollars.
That's more money than...
Yeah. Free speech is the bedrock of a functioning democracy, and Twitter is a digital town square where matters vital to the future of humanity are debated, Musk said in the purchase announcement. I also want to make Twitter better than ever by enhancing the product with new features, making the algorithms open source to increase trust, defeating the spam bots, and authenticating all humans. Twitter has tremendous potential. I look forward to working with the company and the community of users to unlock it. The deal, pending shareholder approval and expected to close later this year, comes just 10 days after the Twitter board approved a poison pill to prevent a hostile takeover in response to Musk's attempt to buy the company. Board members started taking Musk's offer more seriously when he lined up $46.5 billion in financing. Okay, that's serious.
Mm-hmm.
The sale agreement was announced hours after reports that a deal between Twitter and Musk was close. The deal is a definitive agreement to be acquired by an entity wholly owned by Elon Musk for $54.2 per share, $54.20 per share in cash in a transaction valued at approximately $44 billion, the announcement said. Upon completion of the transaction, Twitter will become a privately held company. Twitter's stock price was up 5.7% on the announcement, but has fluctuated up and down since then. The sale to Musk was unanimously approved by the Twitter board and is expected to close in 2022, later this year, subject to the approval of Twitter stockholders, the receipt of applicable regulatory approvals, and the satisfaction of other customary closing conditions. Musk has famously said he's an advocate of free speech, even though he regularly kills posts that pan his Tesla cars. He said, "By free speech, I simply mean that which matches the law. I am against censorship that goes far beyond the law." Of course, this raises the question of which law. European Union has already warned him that Twitter must comply with the EU's new digital rules under his ownership, or risk hefty fines or even a ban. The World Health Organization has said Musk has a responsibility to fight health misinformation on Twitter, and Musk has fought a ruling that requires Tesla to impose limits on Musk's social media statements, a fight that, incidentally, he lost. In the meantime, a lot of Twitter alternatives, like Mastodon, have seen vastly increased signups. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Elon Musk buys Twitter. And your choices are great. Oh, I know. I suppose that should just be great. Oh, Lordy. Mastodon, here I come. Meh. And others. So far, we have 25 votes. Great is barely ahead, followed by Oh, Lordy and Meh, tied for second place. Mastodon, here I come, and other each have one vote. Of course, we know you'll have more to say about that, so if you head on over to our website, soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the poll, it's been a long time since I did this. You'll
see the forums,
the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 30 April 22, Elon Musk buys Twitter.
I don't even know what Twitter, I don't even use it, never been on it, never.
You're not missing that much. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's just a lot of comments going back and forth, correct?
Well, it's short. So it's kind of
240 characters.
Yeah,
280 characters.
They're expanding that too. But it basically, that's where a lot of people get news about news. Their favorite celebrities, their favorite people. So it's very similar to Facebook in concept, but it's very short messages instead of long posts.
It's designed for more immediate communication as opposed to Facebook, which is designed for long and involved and
no,
pictures
it's called
and things.
No life.
Yeah.
Well, no, a lot of people use it for some really interesting things. A lot of the people in Ukraine are using it to get real information out into the world. You're in the middle of a war. You don't have a lot of time to post a bunch of stuff on Facebook.
It originally,
whereas with Twitter, you can just go pop.
It originally ran over the cell network so that it didn't need internet. It ran on cellular, and that's why.
Yeah, because I thought they were jamming that even in. Matter of fact, the U.S. was going after Russia right now because they were trying to jam a lot of our satellites that are going over Ukraine and Russia. And they're saying, no, don't you mess with our satellites because then it's a violation. And
right. And Twitter does have an immediacy. So a lot of reporters are on Twitter.
Okay.
And things like that. So
like
it
say,
does
I
have
just,
some useful things.
I just never got into it. You know, Facebook was enough BS going back and forth and misinformation.
So it depends on who you follow, right?
Okay.
A lot of people just follow all the celebrities.
Yeah. Well,
and that's fine. But a lot of people follow news sources. A lot of people follow. There's, you know, you get a lot of tech knowledge. A lot of the tech companies are on Twitter. So you can follow them and they'll make announcements there, when they put out
new products.
So you'll get links to that stuff. So you can click on the link and then go see the real thing. So it's a more immediate sort of thing for that. And so that's kind of nice. That's
well, I guess because I've gotten to where now I got so turned off with Facebook. You know, I do very little with that. It's like, do I really want to go over to this others? It's just more like my grandfather used to say, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
Yeah, and they're all full of lint.
I
get that. But there's just that's what Twitter was originally designed for. Now it's just become, you know, I'm looking cute, might go out later sort of stuff too. So
I like some of the fake memes that have come up from Elon, you know, tweeting.
Right.
Now that, but some of them may not be fake because he says some really crazy things on Twitter. But I like the one that says, now that I bought Twitter, I'm going to buy Coke and bring back New Coke.
Yeah.
Well, the thing of it is, though, I also read that he's also still feeling, you know, facing some opposition in different corners, and that is, you know, worldwide. Because, you know, he just can't do it. And then other countries are saying, no, if you're coming in here, you're going to follow these rules.
Well, I said, the European Union has some very strict rules about what's allowed to be said. So, for example, in the European Union, in Germany in particular, there's a lot of Nazi stuff you cannot talk about in any way, shape, or form.
That's great.
And if he allows that stuff,
ooh,
then they'll block Twitter from the European Union. Yep. It's gone. Gone.
Well, what's interesting is I saw an interesting video on how countries teach World War II. And in Germany, they take you to field trips, to concentration camps,
right,
and explain all the horrible things that happened so we never do it again. In Italy, they ignore it completely.
Right.
In Japan, they say, we were minding our own business, and the U.S. dropped a bomb on us for some reason.
Yeah.
And they basically skip over that whole 1935 to 1946 period in history. I think it was on Smarter Every Day. They went to Japan and were interviewing young kids about, you know, what do you know about World War II? So, well, yeah, U.S. attacked us for no reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But, yep.
Yeah, tell that to the folks at the ship sitting at the bottom of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And all the individuals that died there Sunday morning.
The winner writes
the whole
book.
Idea of who wrote the history books.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Well, and, so, yeah.
No, don't go there.
Well,
yeah.
I heard that DeSantis said that
you're going there.
70% of the textbooks are getting banned, and the other 13% are fine.
Yeah, exactly. Math books.
Math books, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't teach math. They can't teach history. They can't teach.
Right.
What do they teach?
Is it Sam Cooke song about that?
Yeah.
But at any rate, let's talk computers. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I will tell you, this last couple of weeks, I have experimented. I've had a number of people who tell me that they want to overclock their Raspberry Pis. And so I tried it. I figured, what the heck, if somebody's going to lose one, it's going to be me.
1.3 gigahertz?
So No. So here's the deal.
Did you do it on your 4 or your 400?
My 4.
Okay.
So far. And the reason is the 4 has a fan. Do not overclock a 3.
No.
I don't know about overclocking the 400 yet. People are saying it's fine because the heat sink is so enormous on that thing. But I wouldn't try it. But my 4 is actively cooled. It has a fan. So I went from 1.8 gigahertz to 2.2 gigahertz, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a 30% increase.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant piece.
You went from 1,800 to 2,200. That sounds bigger.
It sounds bigger, so who knows?
Yeah.
Everywhere but Florida, it's bigger. So I have discovered that my average heat went from about 44 degrees Celsius to 50 degrees Celsius. It throttles at 80, so I'm still well down. Good job.
He really doesn't want to be on camera.
Good job, Dave. Yeah, he doesn't care. He's just going to set it. Yeah, who cares? As long as I didn't break it. Dave, just those of you on YouTube probably noticed that.
Motion sickness.
Yeah. Dave.
No, that's a good place.
Dave knocked his camera down. Dave doesn't want to be on camera. But so I overclocked it, and it's running fine. Like I said, it's running at 50 degrees Celsius, and that's well within tolerance. 80
still
degrees is
right.
Where 85, I think, is where it starts.
Keep
to
your
throttle.
Fingers warm in the winter, but now that we're getting into summer,
yeah,
maybe
we'll
you might
see.
Want
well, that's
it.
Just it. We'll see. You know how hot it actually gets, but.
Well, that's the other thing, though. Within a Pi, you can bring up that instrument panel.
Right.
That will tell you the temperature that is running over in the right-hand corner.
Yep, and that's what I've got. I've actually got it running in the bar across the top.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So I can see that, and it's easy.
I'm still loving the update feature.
Well, that's Linux.
It just
how
does
Linux that. Works. You just you get this little thing that says, click here to update. You update, you're done.
Yeah. And it even gives you a little warning down the bottom. Do you want to do it now, or you want to wait a little while?
Yeah.
No, I'll wait a little bit.
Yeah. And then it'll come up later and remind you again. But it'll never, unlike Windows, it doesn't just suddenly start going.
Yeah, go. And then, I did want to do some work. Too bad.
Too bad. It's not your machine.
Yeah.
Get over yourself. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi. I want to run a Windows 10 computer, and I got a notice that Java is going to update, and I wanted a reminder for me and maybe your other average users what Java does and what your recommendation is about taking the update.
Java is a programming language, and lots of programs use it in the background to do things. So you'll find that
OpenOffice
uses it for background stuff, and a bunch of things do. And every once in a while, there are updates to make it faster or to close off a hole in it somewhere. So updating Java is a good idea because programs will be using it. Windows itself uses it in the background for a lot of things.
Yeah.
There are some websites that use Java code. Java and JavaScript, while related, are not the same thing. So you may find JavaScript in a lot of websites, but there are some that use actual Java.
And I've also seen the Java updater say, you haven't used Java in 6 months. Why don't you uninstall it? And you probably should at that point, because
right.
The reason you were using Java is apparently over and you don't need Java anymore. There's been kind of a big mess in the industry. Since Oracle owns Java, they changed their licensing model. And so now for someone to make a Java program, they have to pay a bigger license than they used to.
Right.
And some companies are passing that on to Java users, not just Java programmers.
Right.
Mm. And so that's the other thing you'll see in the Java installer is that you may have to pay a license to use Java. So a lot of people have stopped using Java.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'll take it as far as I can. I use Mozilla Thunderbird as a browser, and I started the install and got a notice that I can't use it's Firefox, I mean.
Yeah.
Not Thunderbird. And so I'll have to switch browsers and try to install it again. They explained why, and I didn't save it, so I can't explain why Firefox can't open it or can't install it. But
well, Firefox is one of the companies that Steve was just talking about. They no longer support the technology to run Java applets.
Oh.
So if you are using Firefox and you get that notice, it means that the thing you're trying to do, the website you're going to or whatever, is using a Java applet which Firefox no longer supports.
Which they stopped supporting in 2018. So
right.
Just install another browser. I mean, put it on Chrome.
Well, it's not the browser. It's the plugin you're trying to use, and you may not be using it anymore. So for all the browsers, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, either plugins, add-ons, extensions, mm-hmm. depending on what your browser calls it, go to your list and make sure you're still using all of those because you may not be using them anymore and can remove them.
All right. Okay. Well, you've answered my question. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have fun.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So yeah, Java is becoming Java used to run the internet.
Yeah,
I mean everything ran on Java, and now less and less and less as time goes on, as people come to realize that they don't
quite need it.
They don't need it anymore. There's lots of technologies that have taken over and
that are better and more efficient.
Right, and since as Steve said, Java's not necessarily free any longer. People are moving away from it. The easiest way to get somebody to stop using something is to charge them for what used to be free. So that's a
incentive.
That's a lesson for everybody. We all have come to rely on the capabilities of all of these products. Web apps and just apps in general that we load on our phones and whatever. And many of them over the years were written in Java, but now that is changing. And we're finding other technologies, everything from writing things directly in C or Python or whatever, to using back-end technologies, JavaScript, for example, which is still free, although it's got Java in the name, it isn't Java.
and they tried renaming it to ECMAScript a few years ago, yeah. And no one cares.
No one cares.
It's JavaScript.
It's JavaScript. It's always been JavaScript. So they've kept the JavaScript name, but it isn't actually – it's Java-like. It's derived from Java, but it isn't Java. And the licensing is different, and so far at least that's still free. So they're using JavaScript, and they're using Python, and they're using plain C code, and they're using HTML, using PHP, all in the back end. And Java has become less and less necessary. As Steve said, you still use it in some things like LibreOffice, but I don't know if that's changing as well. Who knows? All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that, although we didn't quite make it, we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. I have to stop changing computers every time I come here. I'm looking in the wrong place for things. I'm hitting the wrong buttons to do things. It's annoying. All right.
You just need to be, you have a Windows computer over there you can play with.
No.
He won't go back to the dark side.
I won't go back. All right. You can give us a call, of course, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I'll read another news item. Tech companies aren't exactly known for honoring user privacy to the extent many of us would prefer, but plenty of app developers have demonstrated even lower standards for the data they collect from users. We can't enforce stricter standards, but Apple and Google are at least demanding some level of transparency from developers. Apple took a big head start with privacy labels back in 2020, but Google is now catching up with its own data safety section, and it's ready to begin rolling out to the Play Store. Google's new data safety section, shown off in a nearly complete form back in October, takes a more holistic approach to privacy than Apple's privacy labels, which really just requires developers to explain what data they're collecting. The Play Store will also ask developers to divulge how those data will be used, and if they're shared with third parties, how they're stored, what security practices are in place, and if the developers have gone the extra mile with verification of standardized security practices. Here are the information developers can show in the data safety section. Whether the developer is collecting data and for what purpose, whether the developer is, whether the developer is sharing data with third parties, the app security practices like encryption of data in transit and whether users can ask for data to be deleted, whether a qualifying app has committed to following Google Play's family policy to better protect children in the Play Store, whether the developer has validated their security practices against the global security standard, more specifically the MASVS, the Mobile Application Security Verification Standard. Of course, these disclosures still rely on developers to be honest and transparent, but it's an important step in the right direction and gives users something to hold developers accountable for. The data safety section was originally slated to launch in February, but the timeline has slipped and instead launches this week. The rollout is expected to take a few weeks, and it has begun, so it's reasonably likely most of us won't see it live in the Play Store right away everywhere, but I've already seen a couple of things with it on. Likewise, developers were originally expected to have their form submitted within 2 months of launch, which would have been roughly this month, but the late launch date means the deadline has been pushed back to July 20th. This gives developers almost exactly 12 weeks to get their houses in order. So, do you worry about the data your apps grab and share? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. A lot of this goes back to the EU. Before we get back to the phones, a lot of this goes back to the EU. Right? The European Union has something called the right to be forgotten. If you request it, all of your data must be deleted if you want to sell or have something in the European Union. And a lot of vendors don't do this, particularly the ones that sell your data. They have no control over where what happens to it after they
definitely
sell it.
Definitely don't want to give that up. They right. don't.
So there's a dichotomy there, a pushback. But the EU, which actually cares about user privacy, is very adamant about this. And they have already blocked a number of apps and a number of companies mm-hmm. from doing business in the European Union, which is a not inconsiderable number of people, by the way, going all the way from England over. So they're definitely in the forefront of protecting user privacy. And while our laws here are, to put it politely, much more lax here in the United States, if you want to sell something in the EU, you have to pay attention to their rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing that companies like Apple and like Google are facilitating that by putting those safety and privacy rules, privacy notices in their software stores. So that's a nice that's a nice thing to see.
Yeah,
it now gives you when it's finally completely rolled out. It'll give you the opportunity to take a look at the data privacy section or whatever they're calling it and say, oh, I don't mind if they have these pieces of information. I do mind if they have this information, so I won't download this one. I'll find a different one that does the same thing.
Yep.
It now requires you to do a little more research. It also, sadly, requires you to be responsible for your own stuff.
That's scary.
Yeah, but that's the spirit of being an American, taking personal responsibility. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I personally think it's a very good thing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, same as the first caller, Gary again from Rochester, New York.
Yes, I hung up and listened to your discussion. You commented, or Steve had said that Java. That OpenOffice is written in it, and I use LibreOffice. If I don't install Java, will I still be able to use LibreOffice?
LibreOffice also uses Java code right now. The main version uses Java code in order to do database stuff mostly, and some back-end macro type stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds to me as though I will install it and recognize that I'll have to use another browser. And then I do prefer using Mozilla and just realize that when I'm using Mozilla, I'm just not going to be able to open the websites that are still written in Java. So,
right. And again, as we said, check all your add-ons or extensions. To see whether, turn them all off and see if you still get that error message.
Okay. Well, that underlines it for me. And thank you so much. I did contribute. I am a member and eagerly awaiting my new shirt. And I wish you'd done better. I thought you were going to make it.
Yeah, so did I. Thank you.
Anybody who doesn't pay up is just a freeloader. And
well, there you are. Thank you.
Okay. Well, keep up the good work, and bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So, yes, when you install LibreOffice or OpenOffice, or I suppose if you're still using Apache Office, it's 20 years old, but you should install the Java JRE, the Java Runtime Environment, and the JDK, the Java Development Kit. I think at least the JRE is required at this point, to do some back end stuff. I don't know if they're planning.
One thing I have seen is that it doesn't have to be Sun's Java. The last time I had a Java app, they pointed to someone else's Java that works just fine.
Yep, I use Linux on my machines, and they have their own JRE, which is JRE-like. It does all the same stuff, but it doesn't use Java. So nobody pays anybody for anything. And so, yes, that's my Java runtime environment business. And so, yeah, you can pretty easily find alternatives and use those instead. And like I said, Java's hurting nobody but themselves at this point. You know, I get it. They want they have a product and they want to make money off that product. Believe me when I tell you, I get that. But they also, at this point, by requiring a licensing fee for things that people have been using for years for free, they're causing a bit of a backlash. That's simple enough. So, yeah. Are you having issues?
It's, yeah, the microphones are over-modulated and the callers are too low.
Okay. So good to know.
Sorry about that.
Well, the caller, I can always bump that up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. So, but I've got the board, that knob down as low as it goes. Okay. And it isn't helping any.
Interesting.
I think Rob should maybe change something over there.
Yeah.
He could have.
Who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. At any rate, that's our story so far in terms of things like JavaScript and that. The business about the Play Store and privacy is important. The reality is that for decades now, the main reason we get free stuff is because they're using our data and selling it somewhere. It's one of the reasons I do not have Facebook on my phone. I also do not have Twitter on my phone. I do not have Mastodon on my phone, although from everything people say, Mastodon is pretty clean so far. But that means,
yeah,
that may just mean we don't know.
And there's not that many people using it.
Well, there's that.
They're keeping a very low profile until
right.
gets leaked out.
It's interesting to see that everybody's looking for the next big social platform. We've seen a lot of them come and go. We've seen a lot of them mimicking features that they think are the new hotness on a different platform.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that all takes us.
And part of the problem is it has to be good enough to convince you and all of your friends to move over.
Well, that's the big thing. Yeah. One of the interesting things about Mastodon is I follow the guy who started Mastodon on Mastodon, and he was talking about how, you know, for the longest time, everything ran just fine. And then this whole Twitter announcement came out and suddenly quite literally millions of people were getting Mastodon accounts and his systems all crashed.
Yep.
And he had to beef up everything, rewrite code on the fly, do all kinds of stuff to get it up and running. Yep. And now it is. It's fine.
That was a big thing with Twitter in the first place, too, with the fail whale and.
Right.
Too many people posting. I read a story once where they had a special exception case for Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher because they both had millions of followers. If either of them posted anything, they had to stop every other posting.
Right.
To be able to buffer, you know, millions of messages from between these two people, because a lot of people would follow them both. And right. often they would tweet about each other, so then there would be a reply.
Right. They were doing much the same thing that Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively do.
Yeah.
They tweak each other on Twitter.
Yep.
You know, one of them will post a joke about, they're married.
Parenthood, especially.
Right, Parenthood especially. One of them will post a joke, you know, Ryan never talks to his kids because blah, 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 whatever that is. And then he'll post back, well, yeah, but Blake was blah, 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 whatever it is. And they banter back and forth on each other. And again, they also have millions and millions of followers. And so it's that sort of thing. Kushner and Kunis were the first to do that.
I think that might have been back in the telephone days when it was still over SMS.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I like the one, the Ryan Reynolds one, where he says, I tried to change my airplane seat the other day because of a screaming baby. Apparently that's frowned upon when it's your baby.
Yeah.
Good one. I like that.
Yeah. But yeah, so there are any number of celebrities who use Twitter for fun, as opposed to, you know, buy my latest or come see my latest or whatever that is, who are just using it for fun, and a lot of people follow them, and that's the sort of thing that really builds up a platform, but also that overstresses a platform.
Yeah. Yeah, it works fine with 1,000 people. Let me put 100 million on it and see what happens.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that's where you have to, you know, you beef up your systems and you add more servers and you do all of that stuff. So I get that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have two questions. One of them is less computer than the other.
Yeah.
And I'll start with that one. I'm sure you know about the tone that we used to be able to put on our answering machines that said no human available.
Yeah.
Does that still work?
It should, yes, absolutely. I use it as the start of my answering message on my phone.
Right. It seems like they just start talking as soon as the phone answers and they miss the message.
Yeah, the other end. Especially for robocalls and computer calls, will just start giving their speech as soon as it picks up.
They don't wait for a delay.
Right. So, yeah, it depends on the system at the other end these days, of course. I screen a lot of calls. And most of the time what I get is the spiel as my voicemail from them. For them it will not work.
You should set up an AI so that it answers back. Keep them on the phone as long as you can so they don't scam somebody else.
There are people who do that. Yeah.
Well, that's going to have to be a completely separate topic because I'm not sure how to set up an AI that does that.
Yeah, right.
This one is going to be much easier. I am sure that one was easy. Anyway, when you're watching a YouTube video,
yeah.
Sometimes when you just want to leave that site, whatever you were listening to pops down to the right and just keeps playing.
Sure.
I had that blocked at one time so it didn't happen. It's suddenly happening again, so something has changed. My blocking softwares are still, I haven't changed them any. Is there something I can do to go back to stopping that from happening?
Generally, that happens when you minimize the window and switch to another window.
It's trying to
keep playing because you didn't stop playing that video, so it wants to keep playing it.
Yeah, but if I backspace, I should be backing out of the I use backspace to automatically go back, and if I go back, I'm going to a completely different screen. That video should stop playing because I'm no longer on that screen, and
But you're no longer on the screen, so it puts it in picture-in-picture mode, so you can keep watching it. That's a feature that YouTube has been adding and playing with.
Well, within Chrome.
But how do you get
if
it to
I
stop?
Leave the you know if I got tabs open and I'm listening to a YouTube video. And I click on another tab, the YouTube video still keeps playing.
Right, but if you close that tab, it should stop. He's not closing the tab, he's hitting the back button.
Right.
And my guess is it's YouTube is misinterpreting that.
If I was listening to jazz, some recording of jazz on YouTube, and didn't like that particular song, I would backspace to get a different... basically go back to a previous screen to make a different choice.
Which browser are you in?
Chrome.
Okay. I see in Firefox, just right-click on the picture-in-picture toggle and click hide picture-in-picture for Firefox and the Mozilla tech support. Usually people are trying to turn on picture-in-picture so they can leave a YouTube video running while they do something else.
Right. They're playing a song I don't like, and I want to get a new one. So I go back to make a different selection.
Try stopping the video first.
No, I hadn't done that. I had it fixed for one time. There was something I was running that worked that hadn't happened in a long time, and now it's happening again.
Well, YouTube is adding picture-in-picture mode as a test on many devices, both desktop and mobile. So probably they changed something at their end, so now it's working properly on your computer. It shouldn't have stopped working before.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to have to keep searching and find something because it just drives me crazy.
All right. What you can try to do is go to... Okay. It's the... please do what I'm asking, not what you want. You should be able to go into your account, which is at youtube.com/account_playback, actually, I think, and scroll down to browsing inline playback and disable it.
Okay.
And then you have to refresh your home screen, but that, right. That I think should do it.
Place videos when you hover over them on the home screen, is what my tooltip says that feature does.
Oh, maybe not then.
I was going to say
so it starts playing without clicking the play button, just by hovering the mouse.
I know. That's the mini player, not the inline playback.
Right.
Right.
It opens a mini player. It's like a pop up that just keeps going.
Yeah, I think this is correct. I think Steve is correct. I think they've done something at their end.
Okay.
So we want to turn off picture-in-picture option. And most of the links I'm finding is how to turn it on.
Yeah, right.
Well, just do the opposite to turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you on a desktop or on mobile?
I'm on a laptop, but so...
Yeah. It looks like... It looks like they've made a choice there that you don't like, and I agree with you, but I guess the thing to do is to hit that space bar to stop playing before you go back.
Well, that's not that hard to do, but...
Yeah, but right now that seems to be...
the workaround.
That seems to be how it works. Yeah.
It's better than I have now.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I won't hold it against you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, here's how to turn it off on Android, but that doesn't help him on a desktop.
Right. And it may not be quite the same anymore.
Yeah.
As we said.
It's, with updates and everything else, who knows?
And Google doesn't date their help files.
No, which is not helpful. As such. One of the things that YouTube is great at is letting you do lots and lots of things. One of the things it's not good at is letting you do the things you want to do.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's not your program.
It's not your program. It's their program. And they find
they
that...
They know better.
Well, it all has to do with eyeballs. The longer there are eyeballs... the more they can charge for ads on those videos. So if you can just randomly on your own stop playing a video, that's not good for them. So if you click off of something, they'll just put it down in a mini player and let it keep on playing so that they can continue to make money mm-hmm. from it. I get that. I do.
Sometimes when I'm looking at the statistics of the YouTube channel, they count the number of views your video got. And okay, what's a view? Someone played the video for more than 3 seconds.
Yes.
That's a view, 3 seconds.
That's a view.
Sometimes it takes me more than 3 seconds to find the close button.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
But it counted as a view so they can charge advertisers.
That's exactly right. Not that we see that money because we don't have enough advertisers we don't have enough viewers to get ad money ourselves. That sweet, sweet YouTube ad money. It used to be people could make a heck of a living on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's becoming harder and harder. Much, much harder. You can get plaques and things for 100,000 views, but you don't really start making significant dollars until you have a million or more. So, but people are still using YouTube significantly because it's a very fast and easy way to get out into the public. And people don't read anymore. They prefer to watch. So YouTube is a great way to do that.
Yeah.
And yet the YouTube algorithm is so weird as to what it will show you and what it won't show you and how that all works and all of that stuff.
And sometimes when I want to go back and find something again, I can't find it because the algorithm won't show it to me. So right. just going back doesn't help any.
Right. Well, that's interesting. My Well, we'll see. But anyway, that's the deal there. There are algorithms that Google uses to make money that may not be the thing you want to see yourself and use the way you want to use it. But hey, that's the way the world works. Start your own video streaming channel if you don't like the way Google does YouTube. All right. That music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show, but do not go away because there is an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we continue to be at least partially, not fully supported, but we are, we only get money from you, but we didn't get enough this time. Member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back with more Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more me, Nick Francesco, and more you. So take that quick bio break and then come on back for a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get to anything else, for those of you who skipped the first hour for whatever sick and perverted and demented reason you skip it,
I should shame on you.
I should point out that we did not make our goal. This time around, we were about $15,000 short. So for those of you who did pledge, thank you very much. For those of you who did not, we will see some changes somewhere along the line. We don't know what those changes are or when they'll occur or when they'll whatever. But
see what happens.
There will be changes. All right, the news. And by the way, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Google has confirmed that multiple new vulnerabilities have been discovered in Chrome that have an impact on the browser across all major platforms. Here's everything you need to know to stay safe. Google confirmed the vulnerabilities in a post on its Google Chrome blog, revealing 30 new security flaws that have been discovered in Chrome, 7 of which it says post a high threat level to users. They affect Chrome on Windows, Mac OS, Linux, and mobile, which is pretty much everything.
Yeah, that's it.
As a standard practice in these circumstances, Google is currently restricting information about the vulnerabilities until a majority of users are updated with a fix, and you should use this time wisely to update Chrome. To protect users, Google has released Chrome 101.0.4951.41. which will roll out over the coming days and weeks. And in fact, most people should have it by now already. But you can beat the queue by forcing Chrome to manually check for the update. Click the three dots in the top right corner of Chrome. Click Settings, Help, About Chrome, and then just wait. Chrome will shouldn't find and install the update. Some of you may see a button that says Check for Updates. Click on that. And then when you're reprompted, restart Chrome. The last step is crucial. Chrome will not be protected until you do a restart. I know my Linux systems have already updated. Make sure your Windows and Mac systems are up to date. With Linux, as Dave points out regularly, it does the updating for me. There's a little button in the corner that says update now.
And in fact, it's non-destructive.
It's non-destructive. You don't have to reboot. You have to restart Chrome.
Yeah.
You have to restart Chrome. But you don't have to reboot a Linux machine. Google recently admitted that the number of successful zero-day hacks of Chrome and other browsers and platforms is rising. Big tech companies are increasingly working together to combat this growing threat, though. To be successful, it also requires due diligence from users. So go beat the queue. Force Chrome to update right now. Is your Chrome browser up to date? Remember, the number is 101.0.4951.41.
Almost sounds like a Mac update.
Yep. Getting left elbow J. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Why do they have to have so many dot this, dot that, dot this, dot that?
It's all internal.
One
tiny
little change shouldn't change the first number.
It changes
the second or the third or the fourth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It depends on what got updated and in what section. I used to do that when I managed programmers. We had point updates as well, because sometimes if you're updating the UI, that's one of those numbers. If you're updating the underlying code, that's another one of the numbers. If you're updating second level part, that's another. I mean, it gets a little nuts all the way along.
Yeah.
Especially if you miss a dot. But that becomes kind of necessary when you're dealing with a very large program. You know, I write Python code all the time, but it's rarely more than a couple of hundred lines. I don't really need point releases for that. I just,
version A, B, C.
Yeah, yeah. If that, I don't even bother keeping the old versions mostly. So that's not a big deal. But with this stuff, That's a big deal. And the problem is, of course, I'm one programmer. When I write my code, I write my code.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got a team of people writing,
yeah,
maybe you have a point number for each team or just something along that line. But one way or the other, you've got to keep track of all those changes. And that becomes a fairly huge undertaking. And I get that, but it is important to note that. That you should be up to date with the latest. And it is also important to note that, as I said, a lot of that update, a lot of the keeping safe part is up to you. You not only have to update, but you also have to use common sense. And I know how that's the least common element in the universe, but you need to use common sense. That is to say, when you get a pop-up that says, "Is this okay?" Don't click okay. Think first. Think about what it is you're being asked. Did you intend to do something? Did you say change this, update that, make this happen? Or did it suddenly pop up on its own? And maybe it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not something you want. So pay attention. Google can only protect you so far. Mozilla can only protect you so far. Apple, Google, Microsoft can only protect you so far. A lot of it is up to you. And if you're not paying attention, that's on you.
And the problem is people don't update, so programs are starting to auto-update. But how can you tell a legitimate auto-update from a fake update?
Right.
So that's why people don't update.
Right. Well, that's why you should update by hand.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I do let Google – sometimes I let my Linux machine update. But pretty much every day I go in and initiate an update on my own. That way I know if it comes up and says there's an update, I know that's legit. Mm-hmm. I did it. I made it happen.
Yep.
I will do that quite regularly. At least so far on Linux, I haven't seen any viruses that mimic the style I'm using for my update, for my little pop-ups.
Yep.
So that's nice. But you really need to pay attention. You really need to make sure that what you're doing is what you think you're doing.
There's been a surge in calendar invitation scams.
Yep.
Lately, most calendar programs will allow you to invite other people via email, and so the bad guys are now sending out email invitations that have malicious code in the calendar. So it pops up in your calendar instead of your email, because all these email addresses have already been lost to the bad guys.
Right. Right. And so when you just get an email,
a notification
in your calendar that says you've been invited to this, think.
Yeah, did I?
Is it somebody you even know? Or I get a lot of invitations on Facebook, and most of the time I don't know that person. Or I'm already friends with that person.
And it's a blank picture.
Or it's a blank picture. Yep. I had somebody clone me the other day.
Yep.
One of my friends wrote to me and said, you've been cloned, and took a screenshot of it and showed it to me. It's my picture and yep. all that. And he was trying to, let's just say, get in her good graces.
Yeah, somebody did.
And she and I are friends, and she knows that's not my style. So she knew it wasn't me to begin with.
And the problem is not much Facebook can do, because there could be someone else named Nick Francesco.
Right. And certainly there is. There's a and at least one person I know is DJ Nick Francesco.
Yep.
I don't know who he is, or assuming he's a he, they are. I don't know who they are, but they certainly have the right to call themselves Nick Francesco, since that's their name.
I saw that happening with my wife a few months ago. A new account started popping up, friend request. You know, someone's got your, you know, made a new account. No, that was me. I forgot my password, so I made a new account.
Oh, yeah.
So now she doesn't see everything, because the new account isn't friends with all the same people the old account were.
Right. And that's one reason that you should set up a recovery mode.
Yep.
Which
is going to an email she doesn't have anymore.
Well, and that's just it. You know, you need to update those things. So you can go into every program and set a recovery phone number, recovery email, recovery whatever.
Google and AOL automatically ask every now and then when you log in, is this still valid? Why doesn't everyone else?
Right.
AOL, really?
Yeah. I was just at the RG&E website, because they still have an old, I wanted notices in that. And they've got an old email address. It's dnwright@nwrightpc.com. Yeah. And that doesn't exist anymore. I tried to go in and change it. Yep. The stupid thing won't let me. There's no place to go in and change it.
That's just bad programming.
You can't change your user ID, but you can change your email address. Because I had that happen with RG&E too. So I put my real new email address in my RG&E accounts. So I have to log in with the email that doesn't work.
They use the email address that doesn't work anymore.
Because that's my account name.
That's the account name, not your actual email in the account.
And in the account settings, there's an address field you can change.
I went in and did that. I get, if I do the meter readings and all that, that comes in. But there's another one in there for warnings. And that still says an old email address. And it's like,
probably your,
so I got to give them a call and... Yeah, square that away. It's like, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Not being able to go in there and change it.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm signing into my account.
It's probably a COBOL program passwords. That was written 30 years ago.
Well, exactly right. And, of course, there's a kind of a real estate rush. The land rush of the 1800s is happening on the Internet. One of the reasons that I went on to Mastodon is because I wanted to be Ask Nick, and I wanted to get it before anybody else got it. Will I ever really use Mastodon? That remains to be seen.
Hey, but you never know.
You never know, and I've got it now. I am Ask Nick on Mastodon. Like I've said before, my daughter, when she was born, I took out AmeliaRose.com. I've had a number of people ask to buy it, but there's only ever going to be one AmeliaRose.com, and that's hers. And she's keeping it forever. So she doesn't much use it at the moment, but that's not the point.
Unless the price gets high enough.
No.
A second comma?
Okay, a second comma. Yeah. Maybe. Okay.
Now we're opening the door a little bit.
Yeah. I'll hesitate on the second comma. But
how many figures are after that second comma?
Yeah, exactly. But she's right now it's not negligible, but not enough that it bothers me. She's my daughter.
Yeah,
it's got to get awfully high before I'm bothered by that. So she has.
You always have another kid.
Yeah, I have another one. What the heck? So yeah, but that's the kind of thing that we find people are always. I get a lot of questions about that. How do I get my name on Twitter? You don't. Too late. Somebody else has it. You're done. Find something else.
Or pay them to switch names.
Or pay them to switch names. People will do that. I've been offered a considerable sum of money for AmeliaRose.com, and I'm not going to take it because, like I said, there's only one. You know, if they wanted my name, I'm really angry at the fact that I missed getting Nick.com by one day.
Wow.
Ooh.
I went to register it, and it had been registered the day before by Nickelodeon. Can you imagine what I could have hit them for?
Oh,
I missed it by one day, and it would have been legit.
Yeah.
Nick.com, you know, you could, for example, if I were named Nick McDonald, I could legitimately take out McDonald's.com, and McDonald's would have to pay me rather than just take it back.
Prior art,
and it's my name. That's the law.
Because no one can spell Nickelodeon, so they wouldn't have been able to do that. In fact, they've done Nick Jr.
Right, Nick Jr. and Nick at Night and all of that. Yep. And I could have gotten Nick.com and
Day Late and a Dollar Short.
And never have to talk to you peasants again in my life. But it didn't work out that way. Itchy nose? A little itchy nose? Yeah.
Allergies.
Allergies. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi there. You weren't there that day, but I called in about a thing called Everything, which is a file search thing on Windows. And you weren't there, but Dave said, you know, try it and give us a call back. So that's what I'm doing. And what I got to tell Dave is that it's so fast because it anticipates, it goes to all your drives, and when you type in a file name, it anticipates the keystroke.
Yep.
So it opens super fast, right? And I thought your real listeners would like to know about this because it makes finding a file on Windows so much easier. You know, it really does, and it opens faster too for some reason. You know, I don't you know whether the anticipation knows that as well, but it opens very quickly. And you know,
a lot of programs will load in the background when you go to find something. A program like Everything might say, "Well, probably wants to open this file," and so in the background, I'll preload it.
Yeah, and you download it. It doesn't have any bad trailers to come behind you. You know how you load down one thing and then you get something.
Yeah, you get all that extra junk.
Yep.
Yeah. The extra. It doesn't have that.
Good.
The other thing, and I thought your reader, you know, listeners, because I think over the years your listeners have gotten more sophisticated. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And one thing I use, and especially, it's called PrimoCache. And, you know, I've messed around with different ones. And if you've got an older computer running old, especially older drives, you know, it works really well. You get a month of it free.
Right.
Okay? So you can try it before you do it. And you can set it up against if you've got extra memory, you can just put that against it, and it caches against the drive. And I mean, if you put up like 8 gig of memory, you're guaranteed like a 70-80% hit rate on the cache.
Sure.
So that's what, you know, and then, you know, your readers, if you've got a little extra money and you like to speed up your drive, I use it and it's great. You know, it's just absolutely, so I cannot boot off of, my C drive cannot be an NVMe. So it has to be, you know, it's running SATA 2.
Right.
But the Primo cache actually makes it faster than an NVMe drive.
Right, because it's running out of RAM, which is faster than NVMe.
Yeah, RAM is DDR3, you know, which is still fast enough. You know what I mean? Anyway, enough of me. Okay. All right. Good show. See you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Awesome. Yeah, for those of you who don't know what that is, a thing like PrimoCache, what it is it preloads a certain amount of your hard drive information into memory. So you're trading speed for memory. So if you've got 16 gig of RAM or 32 gig of RAM, then you can afford, generally speaking, depending on what you do, to take some of that for that cache. And so it can preload things and make finding things easier and faster. If you have an NVMe, you're going to see only any sort of SSD, solid-state drive. You're going to see a small increase, maybe. But any hard drive, particularly an older, slower hard drive, you're going to see a pretty massive increase. I played around with it for a while on this machine when I had a caching program, when I had an old and very slow hard drive in this thing. But I have since replaced it with an SSD, and the thing boots up in 8 seconds. I don't really need it anymore. But
remember when RAM drives were very popular because hard drives were way too expensive?
And slow.
Put together a 4 or 5 meg RAM drive, and it was just so fast. You could load all your OS and your apps on it.
Yep. And in particular, people used it for databases.
Yep.
And then every once in a while, they would take an idle moment to write stuff out to the real database. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I am looking for a program that will ferret out duplicate files on my PC, on my Mac. Now and then I'm coming up on files that I've probably copied for some strange reason or recreated 3 and 4 times. And it's almost maddening. I ran into it against last night. So I was wondering if something can search through and identify, multiple creations of the same file.
There are several duplicate file apps. The problem is it's up to you to decide which one to keep.
Well, they're all keepers. I mean,
right. So the question becomes:
location.
Is it an actual duplicate in two different folders, or is it just the same name that you edited a little differently over here versus over there? I haven't worked with any very often. But I have played with some of the utilities from a company called Clever Files. They have a nice disk program called Distrill that I use for checking smart status. So they have one that called Duplicate File Remover. Where it shows you a list of files, and then you can see a preview of those files and choose to remove it or not.
Okay, Duplicate File Remover. Okay.
But yeah, just doing a search for duplicate file remover, it finds a lot of them. And then there's a bunch of websites. The best duplicate file remover, the cleanest duplicate, for the fastest duplicate file remover.
Right.
So everyone has their own idea of what's. So it's whatever one they're getting paid to push.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
There's an article from Macworld. They may have a recommendation versus a just generic website.
Oh, there is an article from Macworld?
From Macworld, from a couple of
years
ago.
You also have to worry about how they determine duplicates.
Yeah. Is it just the file name is duplicated or the contents are duplicated?
And the timestamps?
Yeah. Right.
Because, you could have two same files, but like you were saying before, if one's on my hard drive and I haven't backed it up to, say, another drive, they're the same file name, but this one could be a lot of revisions to it.
Right.
And different size and format.
So the built-in way is open a window with all your files and sort them alphabetically, and then you can see each file.
Assuming they're in the same directory.
Well, no, it searches. It's a find. Open a find.
Search all your
files. So then all the files alphabetically, you'll see file names that are duplicated.
Right. That's the by hand way to do it.
Yeah.
There's a program in Linux called fdupes that does the same thing. But yeah, it's again, as Steve said, there's a caveat, which is which version do you keep? The program's not going to tell you that. You have to decide. Now you can make that decision based on size, based on which directory it's in, based on the date. Pick the newer one.
Yeah. Then you got to feed it into diff to see what the difference is.
Right.
Okay. Well, before I go, I've just purchased a second backup drive, and I really discovered that I can't back up two drives at once. I don't think I can.
Not simultaneously, but you can do it consecutively.
Yeah. Right. Back up one, then back up the other.
Well, you can if you use two different backup programs.
Yeah, but so they're going to both.
Use Time Machine for one and Super Duper for the other. But yeah, that, so then each one will be trying to read your main hard drive and be fighting with the other one
for processing
to read these
time.
Blocks and read those
it's
blocks.
It's faster to do them sequentially.
Yeah.
And more efficient, less chances of error.
And Time Machine will let you have multiple hard drives selected, and it goes through them sequentially as long as they're connected.
Do I need to disconnect one drive and then plug in the other one to do that?
Nope, you can have them both connected at the same time. In the Time Machine preferences, you can tell it which drive to back up now, but if you just leave it alone, they'll both back up automatically.
Oh, okay. Well, as you said, I can't have enough backup, so I'm going to try.
That's exactly right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we get back to the phones, I'm going to read one more news item. What?
So now I want a pina colada.
Yeah. And go out in the rain.
Yeah.
While I personally rather have my iPhone repairs done by someone better equipped to deal with any problems, Apple has a solution for those of you who want to DIY, do it yourself. On Wednesday, Apple announced the debut of its self-service repair store, an online shop that provides manuals, genuine Apple parts, and the necessary tools to make those fixes. The program is already launched in the U.S., with plans for a broader expansion across Europe later this year. According to Apple's announcement, the new online store offers more than 200 individual parts and tools, enabling customers who are experienced with the complexities of repairing electronic devices to complete repairs on the iPhone 12 and iPhone 13 lineups in the iPhone SE third generation, such as the display, battery, and camera. Later this year, the program will also include manuals, parts, and tools to perform repairs on Mac computers with Apple Silicon. Here's how it works. You start by reviewing your product manual, which you'll find on the site, before ordering the necessary parts and tools at that same place. And while prices range from 20 cents for screws to as much as $312, for the entire iPhone 12 Pro Max display kit, you can also rent toolkits for $50. Apple's not the only brand to do this. Samsung announced a similar program, which will launch this summer to allow customers to repair their own Galaxy devices. Now remember, if you're not proficient with prying apart glued cases without breaking something, or rooting around inside $1,000 worth of electronics and prying out expensive bits, it might be a better idea to let a professional handle the repair.
Yep.
But for those of you confident enough to, this is an interesting option. Any bets on how many ruined iPhones we'll see in the coming months?
Yeah.
This is going to be a boon for you.
Yeah, that's so.
Just a ploy to sell new iPhones? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That is a money-making idea.
Apple used to...
Because they are going to get so many phones. Oh, I can do this. And like you say, they get prying it open and all of a sudden crack it open, you know, a crack in the case.
At the very least, they got to buy a new case back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back when Apple used to do end-user repairs, we would get so many broken computers in. Because people tried to open it and couldn't, didn't have the right tools.
Yeah.
Now, you can rent the right tools from Apple, or you can buy them if you're going to do a lot of them. People aren't going to want to do that. And then they get mad at us when we say it's going to cost this much to fix it. And it usually is going to cost more than it would have to have them do the fix in the first place, because you broke these two parts. Now we have to completely replace both of the parts and not just the one.
Right.
So we're kind of dreading it.
From the very earliest days of Apple IIs, we had people who tried to put their own RAM in and destroyed the RAM. Can you replace this? No.
You broke the lever. You broke the lever on the RAM chip. You know?
Or you broke the leg.
Yeah.
The prong out.
The best one I ever had was I had a guy get a new HP. Yeah, it was an HP desktop unit. And somebody came over, it was one of these stores, and set it all up for him. And he was bringing it in for repair. he didn't know how to unscrew the video cable.
Oh, no.
So he pulled on it.
Yep.
Oh.
And he wound up pulling the whole VGA mount off the motherboard.
And strip the cables off the monitor, too, right? If we had one like that. Then you now need a new motherboard and you need a new monitor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. But the reality is this is not like, I'm sure somebody's going to call in and say, you know, I've built my own desktops for years. No, you plugged modules into a motherboard for years. And that's the way they're designed to work.
Yep.
There ain't no plug and play in a phone.
You're not
soldering. Those are purpose-built things.
Service mounting.
And do you have an anti-static mat? And are you following ESD precautions? And when you finish the repair and it doesn't work, what are you going to do?
Right.
We've started getting notes about what to do. So if a customer brings a device in that they've repaired, if the thing that's broken is related to what they've repaired, there's no warranty. So that's a big thing. If you repair the device yourself, there's no warranty on the repair.
Right.
Yep.
If you have an Apple dealer repair it, there's a warranty on the repair.
Right.
Yeah.
So the independent repair program was opened up last year. So if you have a repair shop, you can become an Apple repair center and get the repair tools and the repair manuals.
Like Clint Eastwood said? Are you feeling lucky?
Yeah. This new program is for average people off the street who want to repair their own phone as kind of a one-off. And we are just waiting for that to blow up in their face.
I wouldn't even begin to continue to start.
But the Right to Repair movement is calling for it. In fact, iFixit, who's one of the big proponents of Right to Repair, has a big scathing article about how bad this program is. Because one of the things that happens, you're using genuine Apple parts, which Apple says that's a good thing.
Right.
But that means you have to serialize the new part to your phone.
Right.
But Apple says that's a good thing. iFixit says that's a horrible thing, and you shouldn't have to do that, and so you should buy our part that doesn't need a serial number.
Ah, of course. What a shock.
So the company that's really pushing for Right to Repair happens to make repair tools and manuals.
Unbelievable. What a shocker. Yeah.
Hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. I upgraded I have a laptop I'm trying to learn Linux on. I had Linux Mint Cinnamon 19.4 on it. I just moved it to Linux Mint XFCE 20.3 just to see what the difference was, and also to get the newer version because they'll be coming out with the newest version this summer. When I get it installed, the touchpad will move the mouse around, but it used to be I could just tap the touchpad like you're supposed to and it'd do what it was supposed to do. Now I have to literally press like I'm pressing a button.
Right.
I have to press down on the touchpad to make it work. Is there a setting to get that back so it works as a touchpad and not a mouse?
Yes, there is. In your settings manager, under hardware, you should have mouse and touchpad.
Yeah, I went into that.
And under that, you have a selection of tap touchpad to click. That needs to be selected. And then depending on which version you're using, you may have to restart. But I don't think you do. I don't think you do on any of the newer versions.
Not on the mouse, yeah.
Yeah. So you need to you need to turn on tap touchpad to click.
I'm so used to that when we get a machine in where it's not turned on and I'm tapping and nothing happens.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, I got to push it harder. Well, and on the Macs, they have a touch-sensitive, pressure-sensitive touchpad. So you push it a little bit, one thing happens. You push it harder, something else can happen.
Oh, very exciting.
Which is a lot of learning if you don't know about pushing it harder.
Right.
Okay, I'm in the mouse and touchpad.
Yeah.
And it says devices, and then there's buttons and feedback, and there's left-handed, right-handed, reverse scroll.
Nope,
action.
The next tab over is touchpad.
It's behavior.
Ah, then, no. That's
I got devices.
Under devices, the first line down says device, and it'll name the touchpad.
Okay.
And under that, it says buttons and feedback. Next to buttons and feedback is touchpad.
Next to buttons and feedback is nothing.
Then you don't have the touchpad software turned on, or you're not looking at the right thing. So under device, can you use the down arrow and drop down now over on the right of device is the touchpad turned on. There's a switch, and it should be either gray or green. Well, mine it's green. On yours it could be blue.
Okay, it says eGalaxy Ink, eGalaxy Touch, a whole bunch of gobbledygook after it, and then to the right of it, and then there's a down arrow. To the right of that is a like a slider.
Yeah.
And it's green with a check mark in it.
Okay, so your device is there. So if you hit that down arrow, do you see more devices?
SynPS/2 Synaptics touchpad.
Select that.
Okay. This is hard to select because you're not just tapping. You have to click and hold. Okay, we now got SynPS2 Synaptics touchpad.
And is the space to the right still selected?
It's still green with the check mark in it.
Okay, now do you see touchpad underneath?
Now I see touchpad.
Okay, now you go in that, and one of the choices is a checkbox that says tap touchpad to click.
Got it.
There you go.
And then scrolling mode is two-finger scrolling?
Whatever you want.
Usually one finger moves the mouse and two fingers scrolls, or you turn one, like the right side of the trackpad into
edge scrolling.
Yeah.
Okay, the choices are disabled, edge scrolling, two-fingered scrolling, or circular scrolling.
Yes, and that's what you want to, that's your choice. If you're one of those people who likes to roll their finger down the right edge of the touchpad, that's edge scrolling. If you like to use two fingers to scroll, that's two finger scrolling. And if you like to make circles on the touchpad, that's circular scrolling. That's your choice.
Oh. Well, we'll stick with two finger and see if it works.
There you go.
All right. Now, once I've selected all this, okay, my choices are help and close. There's no save or anything. It's just
no, it should be done. So you should be able to hit close or go back to all settings just by tapping on it.
And the tap works. Thank you.
You're absolutely welcome.
Hey, I did my part. I'm smug, but apparently other people didn't. But
all right, thanks, Andy.
Thank you very much for your help, as always.
Yep. It's not. You just need to know where to find things. When you move to
and
a
what
new
it's
operating
system.
Right. When you need to move to a new operating system, you know how to do everything. You just don't know where it is or what it's called. And that's the secret little sauce that you gotta learn sometimes. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hello. I have a question for you. When you reboot in the safe mode, like you restart it and you're supposed to press F2 or F5?
Yeah, it depends on the motherboard.
BIOS mode or safe mode?
I'm not even sure. They wanted me to reboot in, I don't know which mode it was, but they said to keep pressing the F5 or F2 and to change some type of setting on something.
That would be into the setup. Into F2 would be into the main.
That would be BIOS, yeah.
BIOS.
And every motherboard is different. Some of them are delete, some are F2, some are F10, some are F12.
I think this was either F2 or F5. I don't remember.
Probably
so,
F2.
Yeah, you need to do that the minute. You need to start tapping on that F2 key.
Uh-huh.
The minute you are starting a reboot.
Okay.
And just tap.
And you can't hold it down because that doesn't work. You actually have to tap.
You
got to
keep tapping it.
Tap. And then I go in and do what I had to do.
Yep.
And then what do I do? Restart it?
Yes. There will be a save and restart.
Or save and exit.
Save and exit.
Save and exit.
Right.
And then shut it down?
Well, that'll reboot the whole thing.
Oh, that automatically reboots.
Yeah.
Okay, that was one thing. I got one other question. Speaking of touchpads, on my other laptop, my touchpad stopped working. This happened about 2 months ago. It stopped on its own, and then it started again about a month later on its own. Now, somehow or another, it stopped on its own. There's nothing wrong with the laptop. Did I do something wrong?
There's two main things. Okay. One is hardware dies. That's just life.
Yeah, this is only a year old.
Well, it doesn't honestly matter. But hardware dies. Okay. The second thing is that sometimes if it's a less expensive laptop, it doesn't have a lot of support under the keyboard, under the palm rest. And if you're one of those people who presses hard with your palms, you can warp that touchpad so that it doesn't work anymore.
No, I always use the mouse 90% of the time.
Then it just may be bad, or it may be that
something got turned off.
Something got turned off. You may have turned off the touchpad.
Sometimes when you plug a mouse in, it automatically turns off the trackpad. Right.
Yeah, I use a portable mouse.
Yeah, but the thing of it is,
and
though,
that may have turned off the mouse pad.
Since it is a laptop, there is a setting to turn the touchpad on and off, a key function, whether it's FN and then a certain key on the top that will turn the that little touchpad on and off, because some folks could be, you know, typing along, and if they're resting their hand on that, inadvertently move the mouse around. So they give you the option to turn that on and off. So you got to look.
Oh, I think I just found it. It says touchpad.
There you go. So click that, and it'll go on. Click it again, it'll go off, so you're good.
Then I probably did that myself.
Yeah, yep. Probably accidentally.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
Okay.
Yeah, it depends on what computer you have as to whether or not any of that works. I've got one that's a picture that you could conceivably think that's a mouse with a line through it. So you click that, and then off it goes.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a whole lot of... We had laptops once that you had a physical switch that would turn on and off the Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And the way it worked was every single person who carried it under their arms carried it and turned off that
Wi-Fi
switch
button. Yep.
Every time they carried it around. So I get calls all the time. I'm in class and my server, turn on Wi-Fi. I didn't turn it off. Okay, turn it on anyway. Click, oh, yeah, it works. Okay, thank you, bye. Yeah. And then, of course, they call every class.
It's like
every class.
The poor tech support guy who makes a 3-hour round trip to flip a switch that four people assured him was on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 Let me just this is something Steve was talking about earlier, and I'm gonna talk about it because it happens to me all the time. When you are following step by step instructions of a technician over the phone, do everything the technician tells you to do, and don't do anything else.
Yes.
You think?
I have a dear friend who calls me up for help all the time, and in the middle of me telling him what to do, he'll go, oh, what if I click on this? What if I click on that? What if I click? Don't click anything.
That's when you wish you could come out and slap him up the backside of the head.
A Gibbs slap.
Yeah. Did I tell you to touch it?
When I say click on the Wi-Fi menu, don't click on the Bluetooth menu.
Right.
And just because you see something else opening up, don't touch it.
Right. So you know, if you're gonna call somebody up for help, do them the courtesy of listening to what they say and only doing that.
Or you could be telling them to instruct something and something else. What about this too? Yeah. Right. Let's focus on this first, and then go to something else.
How about, have you tried restarting the computer? Well, I did this and this and this. Have you tried restarting the computer? Then I tried this and this and this and this. Have you tried restarting the computer? And then I tried this and this and this. Have you tried restarting the computer? Do you think maybe I should restart the computer? Yeah, why don't you restart the computer?
What a great idea.
What do I need you for?
Right, exactly.
Oh.
So, yeah, pay attention to what you're being asked to do and do that.
Just do that, and it gets solved a lot faster and easier.
I actually, one time with one person, said, you know what? Call me back after you've played around. and then we'll go through and do the thing you need done. But I can't wait. Yeah. While you
we've had a
click
few
on
call-
everything on the
and you undid everything that, I just did I had, earlier. Right. Yeah.
We have had a few callers too that we've gotten into that where we're trying to walk them through something and they're going, well, what about this and this and this? And focus on what we're trying to do. This is a radio program, and they go off on tangent. It's like I feel like going, oop, lost that call.
Yep. Well, whether it's this show or whether it's friends or particularly if you're paying somebody by the hour, you know what? If you're paying them by the hour, talk as long as you want.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want to do. That's fine.
Sit there and listen.
If you're paying them by the hour, I'll listen to anybody ramble for hours and hours as long as they're paying.
What was your question again? What's your password?
Yeah, right. You know, I was born in a log cabin. I'll listen to that all day if you're paying me. But generally speaking, listen to what you're told and do that and don't do other stuff. But, you know, computers are very complex. And there's a million things that you can change. Most of them you never, ever want to touch.
Yep.
Ever. That's why there's a section called hidden files.
And that's why we don't recommend going into the registry. We will never tell you how to get into the registry and play around with it. Because
that's exactly right.
Going back, though, to listening
hold on.
That goes to a question on YouTube.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Is it safe to use Tor on the dark web?
Yeah, we had a question on YouTube. James wants to know if it's safe to use Tor to get to the dark web. That's the best way to get to the dark web. That's really the only way to get to the dark web.
But it's not safe to go to the dark web.
Tor is the onion router, and the basic idea is that it is the way you get to what's called the dark web. It's basically the same web as every other web, except it's not publicized and it's not always safe.
Yeah.
If you want to go there, you can use any one of a dozen distributions of Linux to get there. But using the Tor browser is, even if you're using Windows, it's dangerous, but you can certainly do it.
And
that's the way to do it.
Yeah, Tor was designed to be a secure-ish anonymous way to browse the web by going in different layers, like an onion. They could call it the Ogre browser. So you go to a place, it goes to a place that then goes to where you want to go. So no one knows where you really went. But there's been a lot of stories lately about how law enforcement and the NSA controls Tor exit nodes.
Yep.
So even though it's theoretically anonymous, they've been able to de-anonymize it. Partly because not a lot of people are using Tor anymore.
Right.
It counts on the randomness of you can't tell by going in who's coming out. So if you have 50 people go in a door, you can't tell which one of them came out. But if only one person went in the door, you're pretty sure who came out.
Yeah, exactly right. And, of course, that also leads us to the point that of VPNs. People use VPNs all the time and think they're safe. The question is who's running that VPN?
Yeah.
And what are they keeping track of? Now, I have run my own VPN on a system. I know that's safe. I'm the guy running it.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly,
what if you don't want to know where you were going?
I don't keep any logs. I don't keep logs.
Yeah.
You can't trace my log if I don't have a log. But I have kept logs just to see what's saved, what's recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is recorded, including my IP address, because it's got to know where to send those data.
Where you come from, where you're going to, anything you passed in the middle.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So,
how long you were there.
Before you start jumping on VPNs and thinking you're the safest person in the known universe, you really need to be aware of the fact that you don't know who's running that VPN. You really don't. I mean, you may know the name of the company, but you don't know who they are. You don't know anything about what they do, and you don't know anything about who they're selling that data to.
And is that name even real?
So, you know, VPNs, who knows? I don't use commercial VPNs. I don't use certainly free VPNs. Anytime you have something that's free, you're the customer. That's the way that works.
Your data is paying for the service.
That's
They're
exactly
selling
right.
your data to pay for the service.
That's exactly right. Unless it's completely an altruistic thing like Linux, where people just do it because they love to do it, you're the product. So be very careful of that stuff. All right. That's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. Let me once again thank each and every one of you who contributed during our recent pledge drive. We did not make our money. Things will change. We don't know how much, but thank you to each and every one of you who did, in fact, contribute. I also want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everyone who called in. Thanks to everyone who voted in the poll. Please continue to vote in the poll. It's about Elon Musk buying Twitter. And you can get to there at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And we will see you next week on the next edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to each other, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours.